Bannock shook his head. He gestured forward and she crept with him behind another tent. Figures raced through the smoke. Yvonne readied her bow, but she could not see whether they were friend or foe. Until two rushed out of the swirling smoke, helms gleaming. Instantly, Yvonne loosed her arrow. One soldier fell dead, the other running two steps before realizing his partner had been killed. Then Bannock was upon him, slicing open his gut before following through with the neck. Yvonne readied another arrow. Sour fear climbed steadily up her throat, her mouth watering and stomach clenching. They slipped past another tent, then another, and past the body of a warrior with an arrow through her chest. A breeze swept through, clearing the smoke in front of them, revealing a dozen soldiers gathered. Yvonne fired, then fired again, and then the smoke concealed the soldiers, but she could recall where they stood. Another arrow. The soldiers rushed toward them. With a roar, Bannock charged, his blade a striking snake so fast and deadly. Yvonne loosed another arrow, then screamed as a soldier snagged her from behind. She fought, swinging her elbow, and heard the soldiers grunt.
"Don't kill that one, she's the one we take!"
The shout came from another soldier, but Yvonne would not be killed or taken. Reaching down, she snatched her dagger and buried it in the soldier's stomach.
"My lady, more are coming, we have to run!"
She could not run, but Bannock could. Dragging her away from the dying soldier's grip, he swept her up against his chest and ran. She clung to the dagger, shaking before slipping the dripping blade into its sheath. All was chaos as they passed a bloodied warrior standing with his sword, snarling to Bannock that he would hold them. Then an arrow caught that warrior's throat and threw him back. Into the smoke they continued, deeper into the hollow, and Bannock began to slow.
"To the pool,"
the old warrior told her, his words a gurgling wheeze.
"Sari will be waiting."
"No!" In horror, she clung to him as he stumbled. "Bannock, Bannock, my friend, we can make it. I will help you." Holding her tightly, he sank to his knees.
"I am your shield, but you must go on alone now."
"No, no, no." Wrapping her arms around his thick torso, she tried to pull his heavy form with her and felt the arrows in his back. So many arrows. Silently screaming through clenched teeth, Yvonne eased him down onto his side. Frantically, she tried to see if there was a way to help him, yet there was not. And his breaths were slowing now, the sound of each one shallow and wet. She cupped his face.
"Please, Bannock, stay with me."
His bloodied hand reached up to clasp hers.
"Go, my lady."
She would not leave him alone. But so quickly silver-fingered Rani came for him. He was with her one moment and gone the next. Yvonne screamed against his still chest, her pain and rage all as one. Through the smoke she heard the approach of more soldiers, the soft clang and jingle of their armor. She reached back for an arrow. Her quiver was gone, lost when the soldier had grabbed her from behind and Bannock had torn her from his grip. But a warrior made use of what she had. Jaw clenched, she yanked the arrows from Bannock's flesh. With burning heart she waited until their shadows resolved through the smoke and she killed them one by one with the arrows they'd used to kill her friend. Then no more arrows she had and there was no one to see her cry. Tears streaming, she kissed Bannock's still cheek. Then she did as he'd bidden her and went. Pulling her dagger from its sheath, she crept silently forward, gaze searching through the smoke. A soft nicker from ahead lifted her heart. Then a breeze slipped through the hollow and revealed her father holding a blade to Sari's throat. A dozen soldiers stood behind him. Jalen smiled.
"A fine morning this is, daughter, and you have a decision to make."
The young warrior lifted her chin as if daring him to slice, defiant tears in her eyes.
"Save yourself, my lady!"
"By running? Or by killing Jalen?" Her grip tightened on the dagger. 4 throws out of 5, the pointed end of the blade found her target. She might kill him, but he might jerk in a death spasm, killing the girl. If her blade didn't find the mark, for certain Sari would die, and she had not enough knives for all of the soldiers. But she was not helpless. She would simply wait for her opportunity and endure whatever suffering was to come, because she was stronger than she knew. Far stronger than Jalen knew, too. Yvonne tossed her dagger to the ground. Chapter 41. Maddock. Full dark it was when Keeler slapped Maddock's face, yet barely did he feel it, so numb his cheek was, as if he were drunk, but never had Maddock drunk so much.
"Maddock!"
the warrior roared into his face.
"Yvonne is gone!"
The numbness vanished, only pain now filling his chest as he saw the bodies in the hollow, the burned tents. But Yvonne's tent stood. Hope only lasted until Artel and Keeler dragged him inside. Her satchel was spilled out onto the bed. A breeze blew through a slit in the hide.
The wolves found her dagger,
Fassad said grimly from behind him.
And Bannock. Ciri?
Keeler asked, voice taut.
Taken with them, I think.
Taken by Jalan, and she would suffer. Matic roared, strength surging through him, but it only carried him forward to the bed. There he fell to his knees beside it. Foam dripped from his mouth and he wiped it away, gathering up silk that smelled of anise, Yvonne's wedding raiments. He buried his face in them. His last breath would be of her scent. Crouching beside him, Ardal gripped his shoulder.
Vela said
that I would lose her.
So he had.
And that she will suffer.
And she said
that I won't protect her, but I vow I will.
Ardal gave a sigh. Matic.
Do not kill me when I sleep,
he said raggedly, for he felt that darkness closing in now.
Ezel said that he gave the brainless beasts one thought, so I will have one thought, to protect her, even after the poison takes me.
Brainless he might be, but his heart, that would still burn true and belong always to a queen, Yvonne. Holding to the thought of her, he slept. Chapter 42. Yvonne. Behind her, Yvonne felt Ciri shudder herself awake. We still ride, Yvonne told her softly, though she didn't think the young warrior was in any danger of falling out of the saddle. Unlike Yvonne, Ciri seemed as comfortable sleeping on a horse as riding it. A shaky little breath and sniffle followed. Though the girl was taller and bigger than Yvonne, she was not yet a warrior's age, perhaps only 12 years. Only twice in these 2 endless days and nights had the girl cried, but Yvonne thought it more of exhaustion than fear. Not yet had they stopped or slept. They'd changed horses, but her father had driven them hard south, and nothing had Yvonne or Ciri eaten or drank, though her father had made the offer. But Yvonne had given the same warning to the young warrior as she'd given Matic before their dinner in Drom. Now the girl's stomach rumbled, loud and hard enough that Yvonne felt it against her back. Her own gave an answering growl. But the dull cramping below her stomach worried Yvonne more than the empty ache in her belly. So hard and so far they'd ridden, and they were not yet done, though they might finally have rest tonight. We've slowed? Ciri whispered. Yvonne nodded. There is the Sisian outpost ahead. Will they keep us imprisoned there, do you think? She heard the hope in the girl's voice, because the outpost was only 2 days' ride distant from where thousands of Parsathians were camped. But that was why Yvonne had no hope. Perhaps a night. Either the soldiers from near the Scourge will already have returned, or they will soon join my father here. Then we will travel to Sisia. For a moment, Ciri was quiet. Then in a small voice, what do you think happened at the Scourge? Yvonne couldn't guess, and she hadn't seen. Her father had put a cloth over her eyes, to prevent Vela from helping anyone find them, he'd said. But he seemed not worried about it now, for a full day the cloth had been untied. The girl had seen the Scourge fall, but Yvonne didn't know if that meant the monster had been defeated, or if her brother hadn't been able to maintain such powerful magic, or if Ezel had crushed the Parsathians as intended and had no more use for the ruins. That her father had removed the blindfold told Yvonne what he believed. The Parsathians posed not as much threat now, yet she couldn't accept that. The warriors likely defeated it. The girl released a soft, relieved breath. That is what I hope. Yvonne only prayed it wasn't a false hope. If you have opportunity in the outpost to escape, take it. Ciri was strong and quick and clever, a warrior through and through. Do not wait for me or try to rescue me. But do not, Yvonne said firmly. I will try to negotiate your release. Most likely my father will force a promise from me or ask me to give him something in trade, and I will agree to it. You may hear me speak lies, but it is only to save your life. Because as long as the girl was here, Yvonne dared not defy him.
I am your dragon, the girl whispered thickly. I will stay with you.
You will not. Instead, memorize all that you can. How many soldiers, how many horses, how fast we ride, and carry that information back home to Matic. Swear this to me, Ciri.
He will come for you.
Absolutely certain, she sounded. And I swear it.
I may carry his child, Yvonne told her.
And for that possibility alone, Matic would come. Perhaps also because he'd vowed to choose her as his bride, and she had been chosen to build a new alliance. Yet she was certain he would come for the child.
That will also be my first lie when I say that I cannot be pregnant.
The girl nodded, then tensed as the outpost gates opened ahead.
Be brave, Yvonne told her softly. Have hope. Let them think you are beaten and defeated if you must, but whatever happens, do not give up.
I will not, the girl whispered, her voice trembling. I will not give up.
Neither would Yvonne. Or perhaps there would be no lie. In a sparse room, Yvonne was given clean robes and linens and a pitcher of water. Faint crimson stained her inner thighs. With trembling fingers, she washed the blood away. Nothing did it mean. Just because they had ridden hard, so very hard, and she'd eaten nothing for days did not mean she would miscarry. And some women bled a little, even with child. Or perhaps she had not been with child to begin. Never had her menses been regular. Yvonne had believed she was pregnant, though. Perhaps it had only been wishful thought, yet she'd hoped so much. Though she would persuade her father that she was not. She requested rags from a female soldier. If her request reached her father's ears, more likely he would believe her. Dressed, she was taken past a chamber where Sari sat at a table with Ragusian soldiers. The girl ate hungrily. From a bowl served by the same stew pot from which the soldiers ate, Yvonne saw with relief. The young warrior had listened well. No Sisian soldiers did Yvonne see, though this outpost contained so many signs of home. Small moonstone carvings decorated the mantle in the chamber where her father waited, and against the wall hung a tapestry depicting Queen Nyset's victory over the 12-faced Galoghed demon. Her father appeared haggard, the lines in his broad face deeper than she had ever seen them. Tall and as solid as an ox, always he'd seemed to her so strong, especially in comparison to herself and her poison-weakened mother. Not so much now, and not only because she had Matic to compare. For so long Jalen had been a terrifying figure who ruled over her life. But so much more of the world she'd seen since leaving her tower, so many more of the people in it. How small he seemed now. And as always, the ragged scar on his throat filled her heart with sheer vicious pleasure.
Sit, Yvonne,
he said, pouring wine into her goblet.
We await your brother's return.
The hot, grassy scent of roasted boa on her plate made Yvonne's stomach growl. She sat but made no move to drink or eat, though her tongue was parched and her belly aching. Only a spoon sat beside her plate, no knife. Her father appeared in no hurry to eat his own meal. Sitting back, he regarded her steadily for a moment before averting his gaze, though pretending that he wanted to avert it. Idly, he stirred his fantail soup, breaking the fat yellow yolk into the cream with the edge of his spoon.
If you truly wish to build an alliance, you should join with us, daughter.
And bow before the destroyer, I will not.
Bow before him?
His brow shot upward.
We intend to stand against him.
Yvonne scoffed. He smiled thinly.
Little choice will I have. Once perhaps I would have bowed before him. It would be the only way to survive him.
You survived him before.
Did I? Or after I held the line at the Four Ridges, did he come with the intention of killing me, and only let me live because I vowed to complete a task for him?
A dull ache constricted in her gut. What task?
He wanted a bride, a woman of the same bloodline that severed his arm, and a virgin, but your mother was not, so I was to get one upon her.
He put down his spoon, his gaze critical.
Imagine my panic when she whelped a sickly, weak heir. I was to present you to the destroyer on his return. He would kill me.
You lie, Yvonne said. You sent me to Tola to be married. Did you expect that king to leave me a virgin?
That was only after Aesil found his power, and I found a new use for you.
He lifted his goblet, looking at her over the rim.
Not all of my children are worthless. You think an alliance between the Western realms will stand against the destroyer? He ripped through us like paper. But if Aesil courts the same power, the same god, then we will be victorious.
By being no different than him?
The difference is that we will not be crushed. Instead, we will do the crushing. That is the only difference that matters, Yvonne, though you were too naive to see it now. One day you will.
Her father shrugged.
And if Aesil fails, then perhaps the bride will be the child you carry. I do not think the destroyer cares how young she is.
Vomit shot up the back of her throat. I carry no child.
Do you pretend that barbarian did not rot upon you night and day?
No, but his seed has not found root. Even now is my bleeding time. Do you wish to see my rags?
Rags that you have bloodied with a prick of your finger.
He gave her an amused look, then glanced to the door when a soldier appeared there, face filthy with travel and sweat.
"Captain, you have arrived. Where is my son?" "Your Highness?"
Eyes darting nervously to Aven, the Ragusian captain came into the room.
"Our king is dead."
Aven burst out with a laugh. So much for his plan to conquer the destroyer. Jalen cocked his head.
"What do you say?"
Face so bloodbare it was gray, the captain repeated.
"The king of Rugus is dead, slain by a barbarian."
Knuckles white, her father demanded.
"Which barbarian?" "Their king, Matic."
Grinning broadly, Yvonne sat back. Her father said nothing more for an endless time. Then a quiet.
"Bring the barbarian girl."
Yvonne's grin vanished. "You will not hurt her."
"I will not,"
her father agreed easily.
"Instead, I will release her so she might send a message to Matic."
"What message?"
"Something that will keep him from coming for you. You'll say that you no longer want to marry him, and you no longer wish to have his child."
Her heart twisted painfully. He will believe the first. The second will not matter. There is no child. He knows this. Certainly not a child that her father might make a bride to save his own skin now that Ezel was dead.
"You do not think he will come for you?"
"Matic has told me that he will never come to my rescue. He will not risk his warriors' lives for mine, and that he would kill me himself if any warriors died while attempting to save me." As Bannock had, sharp grief closed her throat. Her father gave a short laugh.
"A loving suitor you have, daughter."
He lifted his goblet as if in a toast, then downed a long swallow. When he set it down, Yvonne picked it up and, careful to place her lips where his had been, thirstily drank the wine. It tasted sickly sweet, but she had no care as long as something was in her belly. Her father gave her a bemused look, and then his gaze moved to the door.
"Take her to the next chamber."
Sari, looking uncertain and afraid. Yvonne gave her a reassuring smile in the moment before the girl was led away. She faced her father again. "Have you ink and pen? I will write your message."
"I think not to trust you with a pen,"
her father said.
"The girl will remember what you tell her to say, that he has not the heart of a king and he couldn't protect you, so you have no more use for him as a husband, and that I am relinquishing Sissia's throne to take Rugus's, so you also have no more use for his child."
Her heart froze. Never could she imagine saying such words to Matic. They were not at all the same as what Jalen had said before, that she didn't want to marry or have his child. So completely different the messages were, as if designed to rip open Matic's heart. How had Jalen known exactly what to say? The words that should be left unsaid because they could never be forgiven? Her father leaned forward.
"Or I can send the message with the girl's head."
"No," Yvonne whispered. "I will tell her."
"Good girl. But of course it will only be part of the message. The rest will be a stain on a sheet."
She frowned at him in confusion.
"He killed two of my sons. Now I will take his."
He reached for the goblet, tipped it as if to see how much remained inside.
"3 full doses I put in here."
Doses? Yet he'd also drunk some. What would he put in there that he wouldn't fear his own? Oh, Vela, no. In desperate horror, Yvonne gagged and gagged. Some of the sickly sweet wine came up, but not enough. Not enough. Jalen began eating his soup.
"You said you were not pregnant."
She truly didn't know, but it didn't matter. "If you send this message with what he believes is his child bloodied in that sheet, he will come and kill us both."
"He will not find it so easy. The walls of Sissia have held back barbarians for ages."
They would not hold back Matic. Desperately, she tried to vomit more, but no more would come. Pain ripped through her, but it wasn't the potion, not yet. So little hope she'd had, so little. Yet when she'd remembered how Matic had left her, his fierce kiss, his sweet promise, it had been a tiny hope that she'd so desperately clung to. Yet her father's message would fit every twisted view that her would-be husband had ever had of her, and crush Yvonne's every last hope. Nothing would she have of Matic then, nothing at all. Voice ragged, she told him, "Do not do this."
"It is done," her father said, and slurped more soup from his spoon. "Take heart, daughter. I have never heard what happens when a man takes the half-moon milk, but I am about to find out. At least we will be suffering together."
Not enough suffering for him, too much for Yvonne. Oh, Vela, she was not strong enough for this. The first cramp ripped through her belly, then another, tearing open her rage and pain that had been together for so long, tearing open a heart that was already battered and bloodied, tearing a scream from her lungs and throat and soul. And when she stopped screaming, her hope was gone. Chapter 43. Matic. Awakening as a brainless beast whose only thought was of Yvain felt no different than any other of Matic's recent awakenings, except that he still felt weak and hungry.
"He stirs," Artel said in a hushed voice. "Take care. We can't be certain until he speaks."
"Yvain,"
he rasped, his mouth and lips so dry that the word felt as if it cracked his tongue. Above him stretched a hide tent. The familiar comfort of piled furs lay beneath him.
"They left the outpost 2 days past, riding hard for Sissia and surrounded by Raguzian soldiers,"
Fassad answered.
"Ciri,"
Torek told him.
"The scout did not see her leave the outpost with the others, but Keeler and Nami have taken warriors to follow."
So would Matic next. His head swam as he sat up.
"Bannock."
Dano silently shook her head. Grief gripped his heart.
"And at the Hollow and the Scourge?"
53 warriors lost.
In addition to 100 Sissian soldiers who would have been loyal to Yvain. Voice thick, he asked.
"How long has it been?"
"You have been sleeping 4 days."
But he shouldn't have woken at all.
"How did I live?"
"I tried to remind you," Artel said, crouching beside his furs with a small pot in her hand. "Vela said that you might have need of this. We weren't sure whether to rub it on your cock or into the poisoned wound or make you drink it. So we did all three." The cockmonger's oil, a potion that the goddess had stirred with her glowing finger, Matic remembered. And he remembered what else she'd said, that Yvain would suffer at Jalen's hands. He tossed back the furs and stood, unsteady and weak, but only because he'd been abed so long. None of the poison's weakness lingered.
"Bring me to a horse."
The journey to Sissia would take a full turn of the moon. Too long, far too long.
"We will ride with you," Artel told him. "All is prepared. But you must delay for a moment. There is something that needs doing."
There was nothing that needed doing except going after Yvain. His linens and belt hung from a nearby hook. By the time Matic dragged on his boots, he was steadier. He emerged from the tent into the bright sunlight and with all of Parsath gathered before him. No longer was he at the Hollow or the camp, but where Brand Bantic had stood when he'd united the tribes. As far as he could see were Parsathian warriors, their voices lifting and lifting into a roar that was his name.
"Ran Matic!"
"The vote was cast while you slept."
From his left came the familiar voice of Nail, the council minister who had served as advisor to Matic's parents and had tried to serve as a fine advisor to him. The old man's eyes were bright as he came forward on his withered step.
"We had already been of one voice, but your felling the Scourge sealed it." "It was not the Scourge,"
Matic said, voice hoarse with emotion.
"Merely a sorcerer." "A monster is a monster,"
the old warrior said.
"Will you lead us? Will you speak for us?"
Heart swelling, he looked out over the gathered warriors. Matic knew not if he deserved this honor, but he would try to do right by them.
"I will."
The roar of voices lifted again, accompanied by the pounding of feet, the gleam of raised swords.
"We know you intend to ride for your bride, Ran Matic. We will keep the ceremony and feast for when that is done,"
Nail told him.
"But first, the council would also speak with Parsath's new Ran."
Matic nodded, then looked beyond him. The Alliance Council stood near, lacking only Bazir, whose tongue he'd torn from his mouth and whose head he'd given to Yvain. He was glad to see Gareth among them, for it meant that there was little explanation to give. They knew what Jalen was, what Ezel had been.
"I would have a strong alliance,"
he said to them.
"But it cannot stand strong if you coddle corruption, such as Jalen's and Ezel's. The council will say what they wish, and I will listen, but no argument will sway me. I will storm the walls of Sissia. I will have Jalen's head, not for vengeance, but for my bride and for her people."
Pella stepped forward, the gold at her wrists and ankles clinking.
"Ran Matic, we are not here to forbid you from marching against Sissia. Instead, we would ask you to lead the Alliance army against Jalen and to help root out any of Ezel's remaining corruption around the Raguzian throne."
He looked to Rugus's minister, not even in his bearded age, and the moonstone eyes so much like his sister's that Matic's need for her crushed his heart. The boy regarded him with a wary gaze, as if facing a Drapa, perhaps because Madoc had killed two of his brothers and next would kill his father. But not all of the House of Nyset were corrupt, and the boy had given Madoc no reason to view him as such.
Yvain trusts your word, and so will I. Do you ride with us, Tizen?
The boy nodded, surprise and emotion rushing over his face, ending with pride and determination.
I will. Then make ready, brother.
For the young man would be his. Now the boy gave him a wry glance.
Yvain's brother is a dangerous thing to be. It is likely safer to be yours.
Madoc grinned.
So it is.
He turned toward his dragon, then back as a commotion stirred through the gathered warriors, as three riders sped through the crowd. His heart jolted against his ribs. It was Ciri. The girl was flanked by two scouts, her young face pale with fatigue. She reined in her mount in front of him.
I have a message from my lady,
and held a bloodied sheet in her lap. With a dull roaring in his ears, Madoc reached up for her, helped her shivering and exhausted to the ground. His hands cupped her face, saw her tearful eyes, and steeled himself. He had delivered Bazir's head to Yvain in a bloodied jute sack. Whatever was in that sheet, he would not falter.
Tell me,
he said hoarsely.
She says she will never marry a man too weak to protect her,
she recited, voice breaking.
She said your seed took root, but like any weed, she removed it.
Ciri pressed the bloody cloth into his hands, and understanding ripped through him, tore his heart in two. So hard she had hoped for a child, not only to claim her throne, but because she'd wanted to be a mother full of love and wisdom, as Queen Visenne had been to her.
You are certain?
He asked from a raw throat.
This is hers?
Tears spilling over, Ciri nodded.
I held her hand as she lay on the sheet and screamed.
She had screamed? Madoc's heart bled. Only for the greatest suffering would she ever make a sound.
And then she gave this message to you?
She did.
Her chin lifted.
But before we reached the outpost, she said that she would lie to save my life. Her father released me so I might deliver this message, and because she told him that you would not come for her or risk warriors' lives for her, that you would kill her if any warriors were lost in her rescue.
Deeper pain slashed through his heart. Those had not been lies but truth, those things he had said to her. Did she know that they were no longer truth? Did she know that he would come for her? Or had those words he'd said long ago destroyed her hope? So alone she must feel now. Throat choked by pain and shame and grief, he laid his forehead to Ciri's.
You looked after her well, warrior. I see your fatigue. But will you ride with us? You can share a saddle with Torek and make your rest.
I will, Ranmatic, but I need not share his saddle. I can sleep on my horse.
A fine warrior already, as they all were. He looked to his dragon, then to Enox.
You are ready to ride?
We are, she said.
You are commander of that army now,
he said, though she had no liking of that alliance title. But he was Ran, no longer commander.
So it will be you who gives the order.
Ran Madoc, she broke in.
You misunderstand. It is not only the warriors in the alliance army who are prepared to ride. We are all prepared to ride.
The sweep of her arm indicated the gathering, warriors as far as could be seen. Not just the army, all of Parsath, all the members of the seven tribes willing to ride with him. Heart thundering, he stepped forward and roared.
Riders of the Burning Plains, fly with me, and together we will raise the walls that stand between Parsath and a daughter of the Dragon Tribe, chosen by Vela to unite the Western Realms against the Destroyer, the woman who will be our queen!
Thousands of voices shook the vault of the sky in agreement. Madoc turned and looked to his dragon, who appeared as fiercely eager to ride. He gathered his claws, his shield, his sword.
Let us go claim my bride.
Chapter 44 Yvain. If her father would but come out farther into the courtyard, she would kill him. 4 days, Yvain had been back in her tower chamber. Each day she sat on the windowsill, bow and arrow across her lap, waiting for Jalen to come within range. She knew not how her mother had silently waited years and years before ripping out his throat. Such patience Yvain would never have. But she had learned well from her mother. After the outpost, Jalen had thought her weak and broken, with only strength enough to hold on as their horses raced south day after day. Though he had not been wrong, not to begin, and Yvain wondered now whether her mother's long plan had begun the same way, truly shattered in body and heart and mind. If those first days Queen Visenne had lain in bed unmoving and silent had not been pretense, and if it had been in those shattered and broken moments that she'd decided to continue in that way and wait for her opportunity. For that was what Yvonne had done. Truly broken she'd been, truly weak, barely able to cling to her horse. Yet it was not the first time she'd had to. Her journey with Madoc had begun in the same way, and that journey had left her stronger than she'd known. Within days her only pretense was not sitting up straight in her saddle, instead riding as if she'd never had horses or Madoc as her mount. The pretense was hobbling about as if saddle sore, slow and aching. The pretense was always being tired, when in truth she listened and waited. She'd not found the opportunity she'd wanted on that ride, but she was not sorry, because when they'd arrived in Sicia, she'd ridden through the gates of her city, and she'd finally seen her people, and they had seen her. No more could her father hide her, though he claimed now that she'd been savaged by the barbarian king and was recovering in her tower. There the Ragusian guard had carried her again, and again she'd pretended to be weak and unable to climb steps. That weakness and pretense might be why her father didn't bother to check the tower chamber for weapons. Because it had not only been her mother and Yvonne who had waited for opportunity. Her people had too. Word of a queen had reached Sicia before she'd returned, brought in whispers by the soldier Jeppin, and then spreading more loudly after her father and his Ragusian guard had abandoned the city and charged north. And although the guards outside her door might search the maids as they entered, while Yvonne had been gone, no one stood watch there. So the maids had brought in anything they'd pleased, then hidden it out of easy sight. And as her father no longer concealed her existence, the tower windows had been unshuttered. So now Yvonne waited. Whether he came through her chamber door or merely walked through the bailey below, she would put an arrow through him. The sound of the lock lifting on the opposite side of the door had her concealing her bow beneath the cushion of a sofa. Precious few arrows she had, but they were much easier to hide. She lay listlessly in bed when the Ragusian soldier allowed her maids through.
"Your braids have come loose, my lady,"
Pym tisked softly.
"Let us fix them."
Without energy, Yvonne moved to her chair and Pym settled in behind her. Brightly, the maid spoke of all the clever preparations her father was making to defend them against any attack from those brute Parsathians from the north. So safe the maid claimed to feel, knowing that the great king who'd once smote the smiling giant would be the one who defended the city now. And she was so happy to be living in the citadel, where most of the defenses were being built.
"And how pretty you look now,"
the maid chirped, leaning forward to fiddle with a few curls around Yvonne's temples. On a soft breath, she whispered,
"Jeppin said that all is as you requested." Yvonne gave a tiny nod, then glanced over as the Ragusian guard made a rough sound in the back of her throat. She no longer watched the maids and Yvonne. Instead, she gazed out of the north window. Another of the maids caught Yvonne's eye, then gave a quick look to the guard, making a little shoving motion with her hands, asking whether to rush the guard and push her out the window. No good would it do. Two more guards still waited outside the door. Yvonne shook her head, rose to her feet, and crossed over to the window. Pym joined her.
"That is a strange cloud," the maid said.
"It's not a cloud," Yvonne told her, heart thumping. "It is the dust raised by tens upon tens of thousands of charging horses." With Madoc riding at their head, black paint on his brow, silver claws on his fingers, so beautiful he was, and so savagely determined he looked, as if no time at all had passed between receiving her father's message and this moment, as if driven by rage and grief, as he had been in his very worst views of her.
"Oh," Pym breathed, clapping her hands, "surely they will kill us all."
No, Madoc was not here for the maids or her people, only her father and the Ragusian guards, and if he had believed the message Jalin had sent, Yvonne. She looked to the guard.
"You should run. And tell your father."
"Or that, too. Tell him that death has come as silver-fingered Rani does, but it is instead a silver-clawed Ran."
Whose gaze had fixed on this tower, though he could not see her from that distance. Chest tight, she watched him come, wondering if she dared to hope again.
Chapter 45. Madoc. During every short rest they'd taken on the journey south, Tizen had described Sicia's defenses. All were strong, and the great shining wall stood even taller and thicker than Ephorn's. Yet the wall had been broken once, Madoc reminded himself grimly. The destroyer had crashed his way through it.
But although the pounding of hooves and the thundering horde behind Maddox seemed mighty enough to shake the wall down, still it stood. His gaze rose to the ramparts atop the wall, where a metal helm gleamed. Sisian soldiers. Both Yven and Tizen had said that the Ruguzians were centered in the citadel, and the Sisians had been given orders to guard the outer walls. Maddox would have to go through them. But he had told his warriors not to harm the Sisian soldiers if they could, for soon their nations would join under Yven and Maddox's marriage, and he would not begin that union by killing her people. Yet there would be fighting, of that he had no doubt. Her father would lock the gates against the Parsathians, Maddox would make demands and begin his siege, but there would be no reasoning with Jalen, he knew. It would come down to bloodshed, and most of the crimson that ran would not be Jalen's. And it looked as if Jalen was about to make demands of his own. Ahead the gates opened, and two mounted soldiers galloped toward them. To deliver another message? A piece of Yven at a time? Blood rage rising, Maddox raced to meet the soldiers, Enox and his dragon at his sides.
"Ran Maddox!"
the soldier shouted, and Maddox knew him, the soldier from the ambush, Jeppin.
"Our queen says we are to give you any assistance you need, so you have a clear path through the city to the citadel."
In astonishment, Maddox reined his mare to a halt in front of the soldier, and his mount snorted, prancing in eagerness to race again.
"You are giving me a clear path? Against Jalen's orders, but at our queen's command."
The soldier regarded him earnestly.
"We have not the strength to take the citadel ourselves, or we would, but we will fight beside you."
Was he to believe this, or would he ride through the gates into a trap? Maddox glanced at Enox, who shared his suspicion, and at Keeler, who appeared bemused.
"Your bride has a habit of unseating us during our ambushes,"
Keeler said dryly.
"We come to perform legendary feats and she opens the gates."
It was his bride who would be the legend, Maddox thought. In the ages to come, he would rate but a mere mention in the songs they sang of his warrior queen. And did he believe Yven could inspire her people to defy their regent like this? He did, for the Sisians were prepared to love their queen before they'd even met her. Before he'd met Yven, Maddox had been prepared to kill her, and now there was nothing Maddox would not do for his bride. They would do no less.
"All gates?"
Maddox asked. Jeppin nodded.
"Enox,"
he said to her,
"split our warriors into the directions of the wind. I will take the north, send your captains to the east and west, and lead the remaining warriors to the southern gate. We will come at the citadel from all sides. Let them know that soldiers who bear the Sisian sigil are our allies."
With a sharp nod, she galloped back to the waiting riders. Maddox gave a signal for the north to follow and brought Tizen up to ride beside him, now that they would not be fighting their way through the city. He would not have put the boy at the forefront of a battle. Instead, they seemed at the forefront of a parade as they rode through the gates. A surge of Sisian soldiers came at them from the sides, wielding few weapons, riding fewer horses, and joined their number instead of fighting. The wide avenue leading to the citadel at the center of the city had been cleared, as Jeppin promised, but only of carts and carriages. Sisians lined the street, cries of encouragement spurring them forward, tears streaming down cheeks, and as the soldiers had, many of them joined the riders in their march to the citadel. When the first Ruguzian guards appeared, a pair of mounted soldiers who appeared into the avenue ahead, no chance did Maddox even have to draw his sword. A mob of Sisians rushed in, wielding sticks and pots and cursing as they pulled the screaming guards from their saddles. A large square stood before the citadel gates, and was already full of Sisians as they reached it, wielding weapons of whatever they could carry, making use of what they had, as warriors did. And these would be Maddox's people, too. Such pride he had in them already. Cheers rose as Maddox appeared, and they made a path for him and his riders, squeezing close together on either side of the square. Yet so many the crowd numbered, there was hardly room for Maddox and his warriors to ride two abreast. Keeler looked over the scene in astonishment and concern.
"What do we do? When the fighting begins, they will be crushed." "So we give them better weapons,"
Maddox said, leaning over to offer his shield to an old woman who looked up at him with such hope, tears streaming down the lines on her face. Straightening, he called out,
"Sisia, we are here to fight alongside you. Every mounted Parsathian warrior carries an extra blade. Make your way through the streets and back to the avenue to claim your weapons from the riders behind me. And with the warrior whose blade you choose, you will fight together."
Quickly the square emptied, giving them an easier route to the citadel gates. Only mounted warriors and a few Sisian soldiers filled the square as he advanced. The citadel was surrounded by a wall, and inside was yet another wall protecting the main keep, and at each corner of that inner wall stood a tower that pierced the sky, with entrance only from the interior courtyard beyond the inner wall. Tizen had told him which was Yvain's. The northwest tower, nearest to him now. It stood so tall that Matic had no angle to see into a window where she might be looking back at him. Yet so close she was. Only two more walls to breach. He looked to the citadel's gate, a thick lattice of iron and steel. Through it he could see the inner wall's second gate, not yet closed, as Raguzian soldiers scrambled to their positions. They must have known the riders had come, yet had not anticipated the Sisians letting the enemy in through the city's outer wall. If the soldiers were not all in position, then they might not be prepared to defend against warriors who would climb this wall. Only a few Raguzians did he see upon the battlements. He looked at Tizen.
Where is the gate's lever?
Tizen pointed to the stone above the gate where narrow slits revealed where the gatehouse chamber stood.
It can be reached from...
A soldier silently fell from the battlements, a feathered shaft jutting through his helm. Then another toppled over, gurgling and clutching at the arrow protruding through his throat at a deep angle. A screech and clang sounded from within the gatehouse. The gate began to rise. Two women burst out of the gatehouse entry onto the battlements, carrying heavy chamber pots splashed with blood, racing along atop the wall. An arrow felled a soldier who chased after them.
"Race to the inner gate!"
Matic shouted through a burst of hearty laughter. And again, Yvain had paved the way for them. His horse surged forward, warriors thundering after him. Within that inner courtyard, they would be vulnerable to attack from arrows loosed from within the wall through loopholes. Yet most soldiers would take to the battlements, not knowing that their death sat in the northwest tower.
"How many arrows does she have?"
he yelled to Jeppin.
"Not many."
And no doubt she would save one for Jalen, so she would not be able to clear the battlements.
"Take the gatehouse,"
he shouted to the Sisian as they raced through. Yvain must have sent more maids to keep that gate from closing quickly, for a woman sat gasping against the inner wall, holding a cloth to her bloodied head, laughing and cheering them forward. He recognized her. It was the same handmaid Yvain had sent to Matic with the message that first lured him. Then he met the charge from the Raguzian guard and blood rage took him. His sword was a hungry beast, tearing flesh and slinging blood. A war drum pounded in his heart, accompanied by the clash of steel and Raguzian screams, for they had taken his bride and she had suffered. Never would their suffering be enough, the quick death a mercy he hated to give, yet he did, with claws and blade and teeth. With his dragon behind him, he fought his way to the northwest tower. Another gatehouse stood at the base of that massive tower, and Jalen had not hidden within the citadel's keep, as Matic had assumed. Instead, he waited in the shadow of the gatehouse, in front of the open gate, mounted and flanked by his personal guard. The guards that had raped his mother and tied down Queen Vysen. Dripping with the blood of Raguzian soldiers, a grinning Matic called to him,
"It was you who smote the smiling giant? You look not warrior enough to smite a suckfly. Perhaps you blinded him with the shining armor you wear, for certain that has never seen battle. And you are as arrogant as your parents were, pup."
So he was, but not as arrogant as Jalen, standing before an open gate with mounted soldiers who numbered not even a fraction of the warriors Matic had brought. And though hate and blood rage blazed within Matic, Jalen's life was not his alone to take, vengeance not only his. Yet no angle did Yvain have with her father so near to the gatehouse, so Matic needed to lure him away from the walls. Luring away from walls had not worked well with Yvain, but Jalen was not near the warrior and ruler that she was. Dismounting, Matic spread his arms wide, grinning ever wider as he dropped his bloodied blade to the ground.
"I have come for my bride. If you wish to keep her, then meet me in Warrior's Challenge. I vow I will not even use a sword, and never will I break an oath." "And your warriors will stand by. You think me a fool."
"True,"
Matic laughed, because in his experience men such as Jalen could not bear being laughed at.
"But they will also vow not to raise a sword against you. Let this grass here be the battlefield where this war is lost or won."
Jalen looked at the warriors behind him.
"I do not hear a vow."
Matic could not order them to make a vow. They had to give it. Yet although he could hear the unease as they did, their voices rose as one. Hefting an axe, Jalen gave a sudden grin and urged his stallion forward.
Prepare to die, barbarian. You are a fool to think you can take what is mine.
Maddox's grin became a baring of teeth.
You are a fool to think that locking Yvonne in a tower would ever be the same as controlling her.
He knew not where she would place the arrow. Jalen wore a thicker helm than the soldier on the battlements had, yet even the force of an arrowhead striking it would likely knock him unconscious from his horse. From almost directly above, not much other angle would she have. Perhaps his arm, holding the axe. Or his leg, bent with his foot braced in the stirrup. A whistling streak, and the arrow embedded feather deep through the top of his knee, straight down, likely splitting the bone of his calf. Shattering his knee, as hers had been. Yvonne did not want her father to have an easy death, and so he wouldn't. Maddox's warriors surged around him, heading for the Ragusian guards who hadn't yet seen what had struck their king. Jalen had made no sound, though his face whitened with agonizing pain. With deadly intent, Maddox started for him. Eyes widening, fury drawing back his lips, Jalen began to rein his mount aside, as if to flee. Then he made another fool's choice and charged Maddox, swinging the axe at his head. Blood rage volcanic, Maddox dodged the heavy blade and ripped razored claws through the leather girth that secured Jalen's saddle to his mount. Overbalanced by the swing of his own axe, Jalen tumbled from the galloping horse, saddle still between his thighs, landing hard on his shattered leg. The king screamed then, clutching wildly for his fallen axe. Maddox heaved the murdering dog king up by his hair.
"For the lies you said of my father,"
he told him and ripped out his tongue.
"For the rape of my mother and Queen Vysen."
His silver claws shredded cock and balls.
"And for Yvonne's suffering."
This Maddox would have made last longer, forever. Yet he had not yet seen his bride, and she mattered more than vengeance ever could. Still, it was slowly, slowly, that Maddox dug his claws beneath the man's ribs, relishing the agony in his rolling eyes and gurgling scream. All went silent and still when he tore out his heart. He used Jalen's own axe to cut off his head. Both Maddox carried to the tower, for he'd promised to return to her with these on a pike. Late he was in keeping that promise, yet it was still kept. His dragon had made a path for him through the Ragusian guard and into the tower's opulent royal chambers, then ahead up the stairs. So many stairs. A few guards they caught up to, as if the Ragusians had hoped to use Yvonne as protection, for no mercy would they find from warriors whose queen and king the guards had murdered and tortured and raped and beheaded. At the top, his dragon sent more guards into Temra's arms. Maddox stepped over their bloodied corpses as Keeler swung his axe at the heavy lock. Throat thick with emotion, he bade them,
"Wait for me."
In the center of her tower chamber she stood, and nothing he saw of their surroundings, only Yvonne, staring at him with armor so thick that he could read nothing from her face. So thin she was again, as if starved or afraid to eat, and the sight made his stomach ache. Yet such joy also filled his heart and his throat that not a word he could say. He lifted the pike, showing her the head and heart, before tossing them aside. Because it was done, vengeance was done. There was only Yvonne. Maddox started for her. And she said, on a broken whisper, "Please do it quickly." He stumbled to a halt, agony ripping through his chest because she had said that before, with his claws at her throat.
"You think I would kill you?"
She gave no reply, though her lips trembled, silent, hurting. Roaring filled his head. Cavernous pain opened within him. His voice was but a hollow echo of it as he said,
"Do you not know I would tear my heart from my chest before I would ever harm you?"
Her moonstone eyes squeezed shut, a short sobbing breath ripped from her. In devastation, Maddox sank to his knees.
"What have I done never saying this to you?"
he said hoarsely.
"Never telling you these words that I should have said over and over again. What have I done? That you do not know how I would ride across the world just to lay my gaze upon your face, that I would crawl there on the mere hope of knowing your touch again. What have I done, that as I kneel here, you still do not know that with my full heart I love you?"
Tears spilled down her cheeks and she buried her face in her hands. Sobs racked her small frame, so alone she seemed. Never again. Rising, Maddox went to her, removing his bloodied claws before slipping his hands into her hair, gently urging her to look at him.
"You are a queen, but you do not have to hide your tears from me. You say it is not the role of your people to comfort you. That is a duty that I will claim. Do you think I cannot see the walls you've built to protect yourself?
Do you think I cannot see the scars you conceal, or how many more are within you? My only prayer is that your wounded heart will one day heal enough to love me in return, if only a little, and trust that I would give up my life before hurting you. You are my heart, Ivan, and my strength, and certainly my brains.
A laugh shook through her sobs. Finally, she looked up at him, moonstone eyes gleaming with unshed tears.
To have you after all of this, I would have to love you more than a little.
Hope filled him. Throat aching, he agreed softly.
After all that I have done, you would have to love me very much. So will you have me, Ivan?
In answer, she wrapped her arm around his neck, urged him down for a kiss. He lifted her instead, brought her to his mouth, where her lips still trembled against his. Her breath shuddered as he softly tasted her again, and he knew the sweetness of her love for him. She drew back, her eyes searching his face, her hands cupping his jaw.
You shaved your beard.
Because no longer will you need to tug on it when you want me to listen,
he told her.
Always I will listen to you. Always I will hear your words.
Her eyes shimmered with tears again as she smiled. Gruffly he added,
And because it is custom to have a shaved jaw when I marry.
Happy were these tears now, he saw. She kissed him hard then again.
I will still make your life a misery, she said between kisses.
The sweetest misery it would be. Cradling her against his chest, Matic carried her to a door that would never imprison her again.
Then let us begin.
Chapter 46. Ivan. In the great courtyard, still stained with her father's blood, with bare feet on Temra's altar, Ivan married Matic with all of Parsath and Sissia looking on. Then celebration began, with Ivan opening the luxuries of the citadel to all, but there were such great numbers that the feasting and singing spilled beyond the city walls. With her brother and the dragon she reunited in private that evening around a table, and not one thing upon it did she fear would be poisoned. When Keeler's sister joined them, Ivan kissed Ciri for her bravery, making the girl flush with embarrassed pleasure. So happy Ivan already was, so happy Matic had made her, and this only their first day married. Her cheeks ached from smiling and laughing. Yet not all was happy news. Torek seemed distracted throughout much of the evening until finally he said,
I must leave the Western Realms.
All other conversation around the table fell silent, and Ivan sighed. Well, she'd known this might be coming. Vela had said the dragon's wings would fly a great distance, and given all that her father had known, but shouldn't have, she'd guessed what had happened, because Vela had also said Torek still had the Revenant's poison in him.
Azel is dead, she told him. No longer can he see through your eyes.
Matic looked from Torek to Ivan, realization dawning.
That was how Jala knew to find the hollow?
Jaw clenched against rage and grief and shame, Torek nodded.
I didn't realize he was there,
he admitted in a thick voice and touched the back of his head.
I thought the odd feel was lingering sickness and fever, but I showed him the way to our queen. It is no fault of yours,
Matic firmly said.
You need not go anywhere. But it wasn't only Ezel.
Fists clenched. Torek looked at them all with renewed determination.
Vela said it was her brother's poison, Enam, and that god is still here. I still feel him. So perhaps the Destroyer can see through me too, and he will see all that our queen does to build the alliance against him.
We cannot know that he could, Ivan said quietly, heart hurting for him. So fascinated he'd been by the knowledge that Vela was always looking through her eyes and the gifts it brought. Yet now a god looked through Torek's eyes and the knowledge only brought him pain.
We cannot know that he couldn't.
Throat working, Torek said.
I will visit the Tolehi monks first. Perhaps they know how to remove Enam's poison from within me, or blind him, so he cannot see through me. And if not, I will search for answers elsewhere, but I will not remain here and risk everything you try to build. After you have defeated the Destroyer, then I can return.
Ivan looked to the others, saw the need to persuade him to stay on the warriors' faces, yet no words to do it with. And so there was only pain and frustration and loss. Except from young Ciri, who scraped meat from bone with her teeth as she told him,
You have to return. You are the greatest warrior in our tribe, so obviously you are the only warrior I would ever deign to marry.
Torek choked on a laugh.
Perhaps I will return for that, then.
The girl grinned at him, and lightness returned to the other warriors' faces.
But still, it was pleasure and pain, as a wedding feast became a goodbye feast as well. When it was full dark, Matic carried her up the steps that led to the top of Sissia's great wall. Cradled against his chest, she told him softly, "I can climb these better now."
"So you can, but not once this night will I let you out of my arms."
Nor would she let go of him. High they climbed, because Yvain had not known where else to go. To claim her husband within the citadel seemed to show preference for Sissia. To claim him in the Parsathian camps outside the wall seemed to show preference for them. But in this way, they could do both. The great wall was wide enough for horses to ride its length six abreast, and so their furs they easily spread between the battlements. Yet not immediately did they lie upon them, for this was a view such as neither Yvain nor Matic had ever had. All of the city they could see, as celebrations carried into the night. Many warriors still remained within the walls, though not all, because even a city such as hers had not enough grasslands to feed tens of thousands of horses. So across the rolling green fields outside the wall many horses grazed amid the camps, joined by many Sissians, especially those who had shared blades with Parsathian warriors that day. So full her heart was as she looked, then lifted her gaze farther east. "Enox rides to Rugus next?"
"She does,"
Matic said softly behind her, kissing the length of her neck. "I am next in line to the throne," she told him, "but I do not want to take that crown, so I know not what to do." Her husband's strong arms came around her, pulling her back against his chest.
"I have a suggestion."
"I will take any."
"Your brother imprisoned Commander Iova. Free her and allow her to act as regent until the people of Rugus choose their own queen or king."
"As Parsath does?" He nodded against her hair. Perhaps a difficult change to make, or perhaps easier than she knew. "That is a fine suggestion. Should I do the same for Sissia?" He laughed.
"What would be the purpose? They would have no other but Nyset's heir."
"Perhaps not, but they would choose." She sighed. "Though I could not make that change even if I wanted to. I am not truly a queen yet, and will not be until I reach a queen's age or until... Her breath hitched, and so tightly he held her then. Blindly she stared out over the wall. "I was so careful, Matic, drinking only what he drank and still..." So terribly her chest ached. "But I was already bleeding, so he may have only hastened the inevitable after the battle at the Hollow and that long ride, or I was never pregnant to begin, yet I still... Why did I not guess what he had done? I should have been more careful, protected her from him." His voice was thick against her ear.
"You did all that you could."
"It was not enough."
"And many times since I found you gone, I have said the same. I did not protect you, and because you fell into Jalen's hands, you suffered this. If you will blame yourself, my wife, you must blame me first."
"I will not," she said. Matic had done all that he could to protect her. Nothing better could he have done.
"Blame Torek, then."
She knew his purpose, and yet still the thought could not be borne. "I will not."
"Bannock?"
Her throat knotted painfully. She shook her head.
"Then blame Ezel,"
he said softly. She nodded.
"And your father."
She drew a deep cleansing breath. "Yes."
"Then that blame is where it belongs."
"And where is yours?" she asked dryly, for she knew he still carried it on his shoulders. His rumbling laugh said it was true.
"I would add Vela, though that is more difficult."
"Because she saved you too? She had heard of what the potion had done."
"Even that is difficult. I am grateful, but also angry she did nothing for your soldiers. But that is a futile anger, because what do I know of gods? I know not what they can and cannot do. So I save my blame and anger for Ezel and Jalen, who poisoned them and used them."
"Yes," she agreed.
"But she also spoke truth. I did not protect you. I never truly had you. Then I lost you. And I would have died without saying that I loved you. Utterly defeated I was then, Yvain, and so I discovered what sort of man I am."
Eyes burning, she whispered, "What sort is that?"
"A man who will never give up fighting for those I love. Even unto death, I had every intention of coming back to protect you. But it is not only you. I love my people too. And today, I learned to love yours. Never will I give up on them. So I am a man with the heart of a king."
So he was. Tears slipping down her cheeks, she whispered, "You think you never truly had me?"
"I know I did not, for if I had, you would have never doubted whether I would come for you, Not for a moment would you think I might hurt you.
Madoc turned her to face him, cupping her tear-stained cheeks in his big hands.
I know not what challenges and dangers we will face as we complete Vela's task, but I know this. From all that I have learned, never will I look at you again without a clear view, and you will always know that I'll come for you. Do you have any doubts?
Not one.
So it matters not what will come at us as we build this alliance against the Destroyer, no matter what lies we are told, no matter what occurs. After all we have been through, there is nothing now that could tear us asunder.
Nothing at all. With happy tears, she told him, "So much I love you." His dark eyes flared hot, and he lifted her against him.
Then ride with me, my warrior queen. Into battle we will fly.
So gladly she kissed him, and this battle they fought in the same manner as they would every battle to come, as one. Epilogue. Madoc found Yvain atop the Sisian wall. Not since their wedding night 2 years past had they been up here. Yet it was not those sweet memories she was reliving, he knew. With arms wrapped around herself, she watched a group riding north away from the city. So many people they loved were among that party. Her brother Tizen, who would try to persuade the rulers of northern realms to join their alliance. Keeler and Ardal had also gone with him as her brother's primary guard. And Ciri, who would have followed them even if she had been forbidden to, so the young warrior had been given permission instead. Madoc circled his arms around her waist, pulled her back to his chest.
You have prepared them well.
As she had so many others sent out to the many realms, so hard she'd worked in the past years, first rebuilding the alliance nearer to home, seeking those who were willing to go with the message that they would all need to stand together, to ask the realms what was needed, and a promise that when the time came, all would converge and ride against the Destroyer. To those groups she had told them everything she knew about the people they would encounter on their journeys, the queens and kings they must persuade, all that her mother had told her.
"So hard this is," she whispered. "They will be so far away, out of our sight, and we will have no way of helping them when trouble they face."
And certainly they would. Madoc's quick laugh rumbled out.
"This is what it must be like to have children."
She laughed too, then bent her head back for a kiss, sighing softly as he moved his lips to the side of her neck.
"Perhaps I should have gone too."
"You are where you should be, my warrior queen,"
he said, pinching her earlobe with his teeth, and with his sword hand he drew up the silk skirt of her robe.
"You are the burning heart of this new alliance. They may fly far, but always they will know where to return for strength and for help. And so hot the heart of you is."
His fingers stroked through her wetness and she trembled against him.
"Madoc," she breathed.
"A fierce dragon you seek to make for the Western realms,"
he said, lifting her and sliding deep, so deep within her scorching embrace.
"An alliance to protect all within, an alliance of claws and wings and fangs and sting."
She cried out as he pumped into her, deeper and deeper.
"And armor!
And armor!"
he echoed, his grunts harsh in her ear, his cock hard as steel within her.
"For when the Destroyer arrives, these dragons will gather and serve as a guard for all that we love, and you will be the burning heart."
As she was his. Her back arched and she writhed upon him. Then he held her so tight as they flew together. With ragged breaths, they came down, and she turned within his arms, buried her face in his chest.
"So much pain the Destroyer left in our parents," she whispered, "and so much has passed to the children. I would never want our daughters and sons to know the horror that the children who lived through his terror did."
"Because so many young ones were taken and enslaved to serve in his army."
"I would not either,"
Madoc said thickly.
"But we will defeat him."
She nodded against his chest, then pulled back slightly to withdraw a vial that she'd tucked into the linen wrapping near her wrist. The half-moon milk that she'd taken in small doses as warriors did to force their menstrual blood to flow. For the past 2 years they had traveled hard and often throughout the realms that made up the Alliance, so she had not risked becoming pregnant again. And because, he thought, of what she had just said, they would wait until the Destroyer was defeated. Except now, she tossed the vial over the side of the wall. His warrior queen looked up at him, her moonstone eyes shining.
"The dragon we gather will stop him."
So Madoc believed, too.
"This is true."
"No," but we will make it true. She drew him down for the sweetest kiss. So this is hope.
This concludes A Heart of Blood and Ashes by Mila Vane, narrated by Nicole Poole. Copyright 2020 by Melissa Kahn. This unabridged audiobook is recorded by arrangement with Berkeley, an imprint of Penguin Publishing Group, a division of Penguin Random House, LLC, and was produced in the year 2020 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.